Delighted to have the opportunity to chat to somebody who critics have described as a genre-bending violinist, Curtis Stewart. That's quite a modern terminology to describe you, Curtis. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree with the term. I'm not so sure that it is particularly modern. I mean, I think the words are modern. I think that composers and musicians have been, quote-unquote, bending genres since the beginning of music, you know, when... somebody like, you know, Beethoven was a genre-bending composer. Someone like Schoenberg was a genre-bending composer. Someone like James Brown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not that I'm comparing myself to those people, but I see genres as a means for clarifying the multitude of musics that there are to people. So that, you know, if I love James Brown, I want to hear more music like it. So therefore, we're going to listen to funk, you know, or R&B. but I don't necessarily see genres.
You don't put them into the boxes, which is what a lot of people like to do, yeah.
It's just a box. It's like a teaching tool. That's how I'm
Okay.
also a music teacher. I see genres as a tool to bring your music to people, and not necessarily a box to put yourself in.
Your album, your debut album, Chord of Colours, and it really is an eclectic mix of classical meets jazz, meets hip hop, meets electronics. When you were recording this album, was it an evolving album as you were putting it all together? Or did you know before you actually went into the studio that it was going to be a mixture of all these different genres of music?
Well, I've been working with my band since about 2009 when I graduated from the Eastman School of Music. I had done a math degree as well as a classical violin degree. And I was exploring improvisation and the work of both my mom, who's a Greek violinist, and my dad, who is a jazz tuba player. And I just felt like I needed to find my own voice, and I wanted to do it through my band. And so I through those how long has it been? It's been about 7 years now. The accumulation of various things that resonated with me, I think that's really what brought the different styles into play. But there are several trio tracks on that album, and those were an accumulation of many years. So that's the Outcast prototype track, Giant Steps, the Bach Adagio suite, as well as several Webern pieces arranged for my jazz trio. So those were all preconceived. But the things that kind of evolved, I mean, the album just getting longer and longer. It's a 25-track album. But the things that I kept running into different people in New York, for example, this guy Tyler Gilmore, who does really wonderful electronics, live electronic editing of various sounds in the jazz world and community. And I just threw some ideas to him about doing some Webern and having him remix it. Actually, doing some Bach and having him remix it, but also playing a Webern piece for violin and piano. But instead of piano, we use the electronics to recreate the various textures of the piano.
I mean, that's a very fascinating part of the album for me, is that you do use electronics to really what is very well known classical pieces of music. Did you find that people have been very receptive to this? Sometimes, they say, oh, it's Bach, it's classical, and you shouldn't really mix this sort of, it doesn't sound right.
When I created it, I was thinking, I just want to create something that resonates with me. And so I think what that did was it created a kind of schism. So there's some people that really love it. And then there are some other people who actually kind of hate it. And like, for example, I posted something on Facebook Violinists or something along those lines. And this one person was like, I love this. This is exactly what if Bach was alive now, he would have wanted to do this. But then somebody else said, this is a piece of bleep. So it was quite polarizing.
But it means people are talking about the music, which cannot be a bad thing.
Right, exactly. Well, I don't want to Donald Trump it up, but that's not my intent
It's a
either.
great expression. Well, interesting you said that Bach, you think Bach might have been doing it, because actually I do think he might have been, because he was very innovative for his day. And it's very interesting to see a lot of jazz musicians do put a jazz element into many of Bach's pieces. But I was really curious as why you chose Anton Webern.
Yeah, Bach was certainly an improviser and, and master architect of composition. And so I see his compositions as articulations of his potential improvisation. Someone like Webern was a master composer and, whittling down an idea to its core. So whatever started out as may or may not have started out as improvisation for Webern really was kind of a process of editing, I believe, by the end of the composition process. And I guess I just love his music. I love the concept of it. I love the tonality of it. I love how he extended from Schoenberg but did something very different. I love the fact that if you listen to his early works, he sounds like a version of Wagner and Strauss mixed together. And then where he took those influences almost as a reactionary in making the smallest, it's like a different kind of minimalism, not like Steve Reich minimalism, but minimalism that of like economy of themes and harmonic content. And I just thought that what if we improvised around a piece of Webern's? First of all, I love the music, but what if we improvise around these pieces as if, like, this is what Webern was doing in the drawing board when he was taking an idea and bending it and throwing it around and, you know, trying to figure out what to do with this idea. And so I guess that was the concept behind that piece.
It's fascinating, really fascinating. You mentioned that you use electronics, but I'm guessing that you play the acoustic violin rather than the electric violin. Is there a reason why you don't do that?
I just love the sound of the violin. I've been trained classically. My mom plays violin. I'm in a community of acoustic violin players. The electric violin has a lot of options to it. I just personally love the voice of the violin and the qualities you can get with the bow touching the string and the fact that that sound is what is resonating. The electric violin had there's so many options with pedals and plugging it in, but you know the same options are there for acoustic violin. I actually use a DPA microphone, and I've just started working with Tyler to build my own electronic prepared violin. So, for example, I hope nobody steals this idea because it hasn't been patented yet. But essentially, you mic the violin. And then that signal goes into Ableton or whatever program you want to use, Max MSP, and you create a MIDI program that reads the sounds of the violin and translates that into MIDI and electronic sounds. So therefore, those notes can trigger any set of other notes, which could potentially change. So for example, if I play the note E, that could trigger a bass sound, or if I play the note E at another time, it might trigger a feedback noise, et cetera, et cetera. I'm also creating a set of drum sounds that are manipulations of a violin pitch. So, for example, if I create a snap pizzicato, if he drops that down 2 octaves, slows it down, maybe adds a touch of 808 kick in there, it becomes like this massive kick drum. So it's like as if you're inside the violin in slow motion, hearing me do this snap pizzicato.
Thank you.
as you mentioned, your mother is the internationally renowned violinist Electra Curtis. So was it a given that you were always going to play the violin?
My mom's going to hate me for saying this, but it took me a long time to really love the violin, actually. It wasn't until I really started improvising that I fell in love with what I could, the freedom and the modes of expression that you can find on the instrument. I remember the day they took me into, my mom and dad took me to a music shop, and I was looking around. I saw the drums. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I saw a clarinet. I was like, huh, that looks kind of interesting. But then I looked at my mom and I was like, you know what? I want to play the violin. And not that she pressured me or anything. I just felt good about doing that.
Well, I should mention that your father obviously is the internationally renowned Bob Stewart, who I've been told is probably the greatest tuba player in the world at the moment. You were never tempted to take up the tuba?
Well, he already did it.
That's very true.
I remember as a kid, you know, he would have the tuba on the bedside and we'd be talking or something, and I was, you know, five or something. Mm-hmm. And this instrument was massive and he would play it, and I would actually look down into the bell as he was playing the tuba, which is a really interesting memory to have. But I never really felt like I wanted to play tuba. I think the thing that my dad inspired in me was just the joy of improvising. I would look at him on stage and just what they were able to do, and there was the fact that there was no music up there, and they would go into these spaces and zones of music that they had no idea they could get to.
Right.
And they, you know, and they would just enter those realms freely and, you know, powerfully. And I always really wanted to just be a part of that. I would kind of imagine myself, what would I play if I was up there doing that?
So, and you do play with your father, though, don't you?
Yeah, I play with both my mom and my dad very frequently. Yep.
Because it's interesting that you say about the tuba. And I think one of the things that your dad brought to the instrument was he brought it into contemporary band settings. And also he played with so many greats.
Sonny Rollins, Chick Corea, Gil Evans. To name a few.
Do you have any stories about meeting any of them, these great musicians?
Yeah, I have a story. I met Dizzy Gillespie when he was on tour in Japan. And apparently there's a picture floating around somewhere. I can't find it. But of him blowing out his cheek and he's playing his, you know, signature trumpet. And I'm sitting there just like looking at him wide-eyed.
That's fantastic.
Another picture of, I'm spacing out on the name right now, but, McCoy Tyner. I was hanging out with my dad right before a rehearsal of his.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the band got there early. Everybody was ready to play. Oh, no. I hope this is not a bad story for McCoy Tyner. Anyway, and he was probably like an hour late.
Oh, wow, really?
Got a chance to, like, talk to everybody, Steve Touré and people like that. And, you know, he finally came in and it was like a spirit walking into the room.
Yeah, I can believe that. Gosh, absolutely amazing. I mean, you've been around jazz royalty, really.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and I'm very grateful.
I mean, well, you yourself have performed with some incredible artists. I mean, Wycliffe Gordon, I'm thinking, I mean, Stevie Wonder. I mean, mm-hmm. Who doesn't want to play with Stevie Wonder? Yeah. Jason Moran, Henry Threadgrill. I mean, they're all very different as well. So did they give you the inspiration to finally go out and do this album on your own and to produce it in the way, given how diverse your pieces and the arrangements are on this album?
Certainly. I think various people inspired me in different ways, whether it was directly through the music or their rehearsal process or just an idea or in conversation. For example, Henry Threadgill, I remember doing a gig with him. It was a string quartet with his with his band, and the way he would rehearse, he would loop things and rework things in rehearsal, and it just made me, and just the spirit of the band as they were playing in rehearsal was really tremendous. And I just remember I just want to take that energy and bring it into my band. Or someone like Steve Coleman, who I would go to his workshops, and he had this very impressive technique of just musicianship, you know, in terms of rhythmic strength and being able to hear all the parts at once, and a philosophy, you know, you can't lean on anybody else. You yourself have to bring the music to the band. And if everybody's doing that, it makes it that much stronger. Or just seeing somebody like Jason Moran and He had this thing at the Whitney, this residency for several days at the Whitney called Bleed. And I kind of just jumped on board with that for one piece with him and his wife, Alicia Halmoran. And they just seeing their process of creating art, like they really had a thought process about what art was and not just music or not just virtuosity, but having an image and a vision for what types of aesthetic you want to bring in your music. And that's kind of something I thought about a lot as well. I mean, there's so many influences. It's overwhelmingly, it's hard to imagine, think about all of them right at the moment. But
Right. I also noticed that you're a teacher yourself, and do you find that the your students actually relate more to what you're doing now, particularly with the electronics, and it's not sort of straight ahead jazz, that they're more curious about this style of music rather than going back to
Well,
the 40s or the 50s or the 60s.
right. I mean, I teach at a music high school, a performing arts high school, LaGuardia Performing Arts, which has many different types of musical talents and personalities. And so a lot of the kids are interested in many different kinds of things. So, for example, one kid plays classical piano and cello. And I didn't tell them about my album actually. And then one day he just came up. He's like, "Oh, I love that Giant Steps thing you did." And I was like, "Oh, wow, okay." And he told his piano teacher about it, who happened to be a friend of mine. And the friend of mine didn't even know about my album at this point, but the kid was bringing that to him. And that piece features me beatboxing a little
Right.
bit. And so I think he dug the miss mi see hearing a beatbox in a jazz world. I think that probably sparked him off also, plus just the rigor of that piece. Giant Steps was something, but then again, somebody else really liked the Bach thing that I did, which was a little more I mean, not straight ahead, but not doesn't isn't really mixing styles in the instrumentation. It's just
Right.
the composition itself. And then yet again, some other kid really loved just my solo violin piece that I composed, which is kind of sounds not like kind of folkish meets classical. But I do think that I did these two sessions with Bill Lawrence from Snarky Puppy, and I'll walk down the hallway and the kids are like, "You played with Bill Lawrence," which he has a very I wouldn't say his music is electronic, but
No.
it's it has a lot of elements of pop in it, which is awesome. And also congrats to Snarky Puppy, who just won their second Grammy the other day.
Absolutely.
So I think they do relate to that type of electronic music. Of course, they're going to relate to music that sounds like pop music that they listen to. But I think it's dangerous to say that young people would not love something about music of the 40s and 50s as well.
Right.
I think there's a feeling there that once they get the bug or they get the taste of it, they would love it just as well. I remember when I went to school at LaGuardia, and I was doing a violin a concerto competition, and I wasn't really listening to a lot of music, but I heard this other kid play a Prokofiev Piano Concerto number 3. And at first I was like, "What is this piece? I've never heard anything like it." But then it was so, fast and passionate and virtuosic, and the chromaticism was so interesting harmonically, and I was like, "I need to listen to this." And so I started listening to Shostakovich, and that probably led me to Schoenberg, which led me to
Weber,
Webern.
yeah,
And so I
absolutely.
think it's possible for one music to I think that's the goal with my album. One music kind of leads you to the next until you realize that it's really all it could potentially be one thing, one big thing of music that you're listening to, and not just electronic music or jazz, etc.
Thank you. I know that you play classical music still.
Yep.
I saw you, I think it was a Tchaikovsky violin concerto that's on
Oh,
YouTube there.
Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn, sorry, Mendelssohn.
That's a video, yeah.
And do you ever sometimes feel when you get on stage that, you know, you're playing this gorgeous piece of music, but do you ever feel like sometimes you just want to take it out of its zone? Or do you just, are you
I
very.
always want to do that. Even when I'm playing jazz, no matter what, even when I was on that Stevie gig, I was like, I really want to just play something. That's my jam. I love to take music and rethink it and rework it. In fact, I play in a string quartet, public quartet, that does this a similar thing. We are a classical contemporary group, but we use improvisation quite a bit. So commissioning composers to write works for a quartet that use improvisation, or writing our own pieces that combine, for example, the music of Charlie Parker and Debussy, where we use improvisation to go back and forth between those two composers who seemingly have nothing in common, but in fact, their harmonic language is very similar in terms of the altered dominant seventh chords and just the chromaticism in their writing. So I think I'm always thinking about that.
Say your name, the name of the band again. That you're sorry, your quartet.
The string quartet is called Public Quartet. It's one
Public.
word,
Okay.
PubliqUartet. And we've been doing very well. We're on a Concert Artists Guild, which is a management company in the States. And next year, we're doing a series of concerts at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, featuring these works and commissions that we're working on. So trying to push it as hard as we can.
I know that you mentioned earlier that you've got a degree in, you've got a BA in mathematics.
That's right.
I'm so impressed. I'm so not
Are you
that
sure?
way
I
inclined,
don't know. You should.
honestly. No. But did you ever think about having another career outside of music?
I had a great teacher in high school. Her name was Dr. Rose, and she was my English teacher. And she saw that as I was writing, she saw that I was very logical and very, just in terms of the right. I'm not saying this. She is saying this. a very logical writer and thinker. And she said, you should do something in math or science. And so I was like, okay. And I applied to the University of Rochester for engineering. So I was actually thinking about being an engineer. I always had ideas about inventions when I was a kid. For example, my dad would play Legos with me all the time. And sometimes he would have to move the car in the middle of Legos because there were street sweeping rules. So I was like, I want my dad to stay with me. So in my head, I drew this whole schematic and invented this whole thing so that nobody would have to move their cars, and the sweeper would just go under the car and like blow. So, so it was pretty. I mean, I always had that idea, and when I was in high school, I was going through my slightly rebellious days, and I was a aggressive inline skater, and I was doing grinding stuff and tricks and flips and stuff where I actually broke my collarbone, but I would design all sorts of ramps and grind boxes and things like that, just like you see in skate parks, and building those with my friends, and it was always so fun. And I mean, not to make a loose connection here, but I see myself in terms of being a composer. I see myself in that light, taking a piece of material and reworking it, bending it, breaking it, seeing what the space is of that material and how you can see it from various angles, connecting it to other things, and just how do you create the architecture of a piece of music.
What are your plans now with this album? Are you going to tour?
With that, I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of projects going on, so it's the idea of touring is hard. I would love to come out to the UK and
We'd
play.
love you to come over, yes.
I'm sure it would be awesome. I played in Poland with my mom and my uncle, who is actually a percussionist, Milo Curtis, and in Poland, and I just had so much fun. There's a huge lineage of jazz violinists in Poland,
Yes, absolutely.
and so I would love to just play in Europe as much as well as France and all over. So I just feel like Europeans would be so much more keen on what I'm up to.
Yeah, very much so.
But the album, it was a huge project. It was like years and years of work, including the album liner notes, which I wrote a lot of poetry for and grabbed quotes from various artists and philosophers and musicians throughout time about the ideas of color. And so it's just been a lot of work, and I'm kind of ready to just keep moving forward to the next one, which I'm already thinking about, and I'm thinking about using this electronic prepared violin pedal for compositions and songs that I want to write. I think that's the next step.
Curtis, thank you so much. I really do hope we get to see you on our shores in London. I'm absolutely convinced they would love your music, and
Thank you.
really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks for reaching out, and it was a pleasure. ¶¶